Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle. And happy 100, guys.
Yay, we made it.
Yeah. We officially hit syndication, don't we?
That's right. Somebody has to start paying us now, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Because we all know that podcasters are only in it for the money.
So as we mentioned in episode 99, we're not going to be doing a retrospective for our 100. And I guess we're not really doing anything that special.
No, this is a very special episode. Thank you.
A very extraordinary, ordinary episode.
Yes.
So in gaming news, I found out today that we actually got a mention on the Catalyst Games website.
Oh, that's good.
They're the guys who make Cosmic Patrol, and, you know, I follow them on Twitter, and they put up a blog post that asked what other genres or what other settings would you like to see for the Cosmic Patrol rules, and I was just kind of like casually reading the article, and then I say, oh, hold on, because the next line said something along the lines of, oh, and the Idle Red Hands already did, like, a 1970 solo mashup. I'm like, holy, we just got a mention on, yeah, like I told Lyle, I almost did a spit take on that one, so
yeah,
I thought that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah, it was a good game.
Yeah.
Both the
actual Cosmic Patrol and the Soul Patrol.
Yeah. Like, I went back and listened to the episode, and I do hope they come up with other settings for it. Remember, we had the idea where you would kind of have those mission briefings, you know, the sort of the closed envelope, and just, like, pick one at random out of the pack for a night of entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a great idea, Lyle, and they can still totally do that.
Damn, we were brimming with good ideas back in the day.
Back in the... So not now?
Yeah.
Man, really selling the people should listen now, huh?
Sorry, we're at 100. We're tired old men.
Back in our youth, we had good ideas.
I remember back in the day when I could still roll dice.
Yeah, then gamer dementia set in.
What would be gamer dementia? You're like, just talk about like first or second edition rules?
I think like, a lot of people have reached that.
Dad, we've gone back. We're up to fifth edition now.
All he does is sit in a dark room and write tables for BRP.
There's no Thaco. There hasn't been Thaco in years, Dad. Stop it. Oh, okay.
What are these negative armor classes?
All right, well, let's see if we can match our Cosmic Patrol glory with the episode that we have coming up. So we decided to do, for the 100th episode, we thought we would do kind of an obvious Warriors, but hopefully fun, and that is Gladiators.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a good excuse to... call watching Spartacus research.
Yeah. Wayne and I are big Spartacus fans, so, you know, we're up to the, I guess it's, I don't know if it's technically the third season or the one after Gods of the Arena, so.
Right. I think technically that's the second season.
Yeah, so I guess Spartacus Vengeance would be, yeah, the second or the third, but we're up to that now. So really enjoying that and just kind of got us thinking about different games that you can play using Gladiators. Like all our warriors, instead of giving you a comprehensive overview of that particular warrior, we've decided to pull out some elements that we thought were fairly special about them and that you can apply to any type of character, but probably a little bit different than our normal warriors. We're actually going to try to talk about how you can actually do a gladiator campaign, because we can actually think that setting can also add a lot of fun to the gaming table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that would be an awesome setting. Again, doing research for this episode, I thought I would really like to play that game, that setting.
So. Yeah, I'll third it as well. Absolutely.
And like straight up, just the first piece of advice would be, if you're even entertaining the idea, you definitely need to watch Spartacus. It is by far, I think, the best series or movie that's been done about gladiators. That just full of ideas, and there's a lot of things that they do so right that'll really make you excited about playing a gladiator.
It also doesn't hurt that about 9 out of every 10 scenes have full-on gratuitous nudity.
It doesn't feel gratuitous.
It actually doesn't. You're right.
Yeah.
Feels just right. No, unlike something like a Game of Thrones where it can get a bit much, in Spartacus it just feels like, I guess they would kind of walk around like that, and it does fit whatever story that they're telling in that particular episode.
I think we've mentioned this before, but I know what I think it is. It's the fact that it's, yeah, just so prevalent. And both the actors and the characters pay it so little attention because it's slaves or people in the background and stuff. So you're kind of like, oh, that's just what would be going on. That's kind of how they would look. And yeah, they're having a full-on conversation with these half or fully naked slaves behind them like it's no big thing. So it kind of isn't.
All right, so our first element is service, or slave.
I thought you were going to go for the Italian there, and the Latin there. Service.
No, well, I said it in Latin. I just didn't say it like Luigi.
Isn't that all Italians speak?
Only here in Japan, and only if they pop through giant tubes and stomp mushrooms.
Blue, blue, blue.
Yeah, so that would be our first element. That they are slaves, or even like the ones that voluntarily chose to be gladiators would still have to swear the same oath,
mm-hmm. Right?
Which is not very pleasant. Where they basically, the oath is like a sacramentum, and they say like, "I will endure to be burned, to be bound, to be beaten, and to be killed by the sword." But it's not all bad, because then they would get regular meals, a very good health care, mm-hmm. And they would celebrities of the day, and we'll talk about that a little bit more later on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was actually kind of thinking about this because one of the major ways to get gladiators was captured slaves. But then I also read that kind of towards the height of the gladiator phase in Roman history, almost at least half of the gladiators were volunteers. Mm-hmm. But as you said, Lyle, they still had to submit to the same oath, and they were still technically slaves.
Yeah, I read that part too. It was kind of confusing, though, because it said that they could renounce their free or citizen status to become slaves, but they still retained a lot of the rights that, I guess, slave gladiators didn't have. So it didn't seem really clear.
Really? Oh, I don't remember reading that, but...
Well, for example, they were able to still bequeath their money and personal effects to family members after they died, which I guess was something that regular slaves or just, I suppose, standard gladiators weren't able to do.
I don't know if they could or not, because I know gladiators were allowed to keep any gifts and or winnings they got.
Yes, but they weren't allowed to pass it on to their next of kin after they died. That was not a right that they had.
Yeah. I mean, in Spartacus we see a good example in the character named Varro.
Right.
Who sold himself to that particular ludus, and the ludus is like a gladiatorial school. And one thing that's really great about Spartacus is they, whenever possible, they will use the actual Latin terms.
Right.
So maybe at first you don't understand what they're saying, but of course the context helps and the repetition, and it helps to really immerse you into the world. But anyway, Varro, he's a Roman citizen who, because of debt, sells himself to the ludus and performs as a gladiator. And he has a gambling problem, which is why he became a gladiator, but he is able to then send a lot of money over to his wife.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And within the context of Spartacus is the only example where we see anybody sending money off, although the other gladiators are able to accumulate money and use that in a way that would be similar to the way a prisoner accumulates money within the prison, and they can buy it at, like, I guess, the prison canteen. Hmm. If the prison canteen had prostitutes.
Right. I was trying to think, yeah. They generally don't have prostitutes in jail, and they're not, in Spartacus, they're not paying for them with smokes, you know?
Well, you know, just kind of going to third, the point that it really would be good research to watch Spartacus is because there's not really a good modern equivalent to the whole gladiator status. So it is really good to have something that shows it so well. Because they're not really prisoners, and they're not really hired fighters. They're not exactly entertainers. It's, yeah, they're just kind of their own special thing.
Yeah, it is kind of like a weird relationship because, well, yeah, they are slaves, and they do, you know, horrible things happen to them. They're expected to die and die well, and if the Dominus gives a command, then they're expected to follow it without blinking an eye. But at the same time, they're an investment, and, you know, you can't just throw them away because, well, if the person who owns them wouldn't have gotten the money back on what they paid to acquire them. So, yeah, as Lyle said, they had decent health care. You know, they got room and board and meals and all this stuff kind of paid for them. So I almost kind of likened it a little bit to, you know, certain people joining the military, especially like the U.S. military.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, I mean, I'm not saying that the people who work in the armed forces are slaves, but it's more like, by any means, but it's more like, yeah, I might have to go off to war, and yeah, I'm going to go through this harsh training, but I'm going to have a place to stay, I'm going to have a job, I'm going to have a support system, I'm going to have something that is better than what I possibly have if I didn't join the military. So I could kind of see it as a viable option for if that was the only choice left to you, instead of going to the mines or having to pay off this huge debt or be a beggar on the street or get killed, which is probably what would happen to you. All right, I might as well be a gladiator. Mm-hmm. And not personally, because I wouldn't fare very well at all.
But, I mean, there's those who are genuine slaves who really chafe at being a gladiator. And, I mean, mm-hmm. it just shows you that even though they're all slaves, there are different stories that you can tell. And if you watch something like Spartacus, you can see, okay, I mean, if they're slaves, I mean, what do they do besides train and go into the games and fight? Which some people probably would love that game. But for those that want a little bit more, you can watch within, like, that TV series, the kind of interactions that they have, even within the tight confines of being a service. A slave.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And yeah, some of them would get special favors and a little bit of freedom, or I guess outings or furloughs and doing tasks.
Yeah, I think it also depends on the rank you kind of had when you came in, you know, kind of like how you were acquired. Like as you said, not that they would really be treated any differently by the Lenista or like the Dominus, but yeah, someone who voluntarily joined up as opposed to someone who was a convicted, like, murderer or felon with the classic forehead tattoo versus someone who was, like, a prisoner of war. Yeah, inside the confines of the Ludus, the school, the gladiators kind of had their own hierarchy. So I think that's really cool, the relationships that go on in between, you know, the different gladiators. So you're like, yeah, well, they're all slaves, but even within that category of slave, there are different kind of levels that they adhere to.
Yeah, and there's so much variability. Like just thinking about how you're listing off those different kind of classes of types of gladiators that you could be. There's so much variety you could have for a character choice. You can be a captured slave from another nation. So there's, you know, lots of different countries and cultures you could be part of. You can be a convicted criminal of something like murder or theft, or you could even be a political prisoner. They had the Noxi, which were guys who just the politicians found embarrassing or obnoxious. So they threw them in there. And then, again, the volunteers. So such a wide array, and kind of the political interactions you can have within the Ludus is just great. A lot of fun.
Yeah, and I mean, the kind of confines of the way you restrict your gladiators can really depend on where you want to set your gladiatorial game. Now, if you do it in Rome, then, of course, yeah, you kind of do what the Ludus, which would be like a little bit like a prison. The one in Spartacus is pretty cool, where they don't have a wall on one side, but just the cliff.
Yeah.
But if you have, like, technology, then, I mean, it could be just, like, things around their neck, explosives around their neck, and that enables the players to have a lot of freedom, but then, of course, there's the constant reminder, and the mark, I guess, like that kind of neck explosive is pretty distinctive looking enough that people could even see that they were slaves or gladiators.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But then it allows the players to move around, you know, but, of course, there's the constant reminder that they aren't totally free.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool if you take it to, like, a science fiction or, like, you know, dark future setting. Yeah, you have those bomb collars. Or when you said, like, kind of like sci-fi, I thought, like, oh, how cool would it be to have, like, a Ludus ship?
Oh, that's so sweet. I love it, just, like, going from planet to planet for the fights. Oh, that's so cool.
And if you wanted to go back and have fantasy, then you kind of take some of those trappings, some sort of magical mark, some sort of magical restriction.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that adds elements, just like the science fiction is like, you know, who they fight and what they fight, you know, the kind of games that they do have.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool. Imagine what kind of games you could have if in like a standard D&D fantasy setting where magic was really prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
You could do all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And you'd also have like access to really decent healing, which actually could be pretty good because like as we see in Spartacus, people get cut up real bad and in certain systems, that means your character is going to be out for a while. But if you did it in like a D&D fantasy setting with access to magic, well, then the downtime is much less. or in like a science fiction setting, the downtime is much less than if you have to rely on natural healing.
And you don't even have to have a high magic or go to science fiction, a high science fiction setting, necessarily, to have that kind of technology or magic available to the gladiators, because they had better access to healthcare than the average citizen.
Right.
So they would get state of the art, because the Lanista, the owner, would invest in that. I mean, that would be something that they would pump a lot of money into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's your solution for the classic problem in D&D about, well, if the clerics can heal the sick, why do people still use splints and medicine and all this stuff? Just go to the cleric. And you're like, oh, well, it's expensive. And the only people who can, you know, really afford it, or some of the people who can afford it, are the people who run or own gladiators. There you go.
So if you want to get healed, guess where you got to go?
I mean, there could be a story right there, is that the player gets mangled or whatever, and in exchange for healing, they have to, you know, serve a certain period of time in a particular ludus. And you can kind of drop in a gladiator storyline within your game, and you're not necessarily playing gladiators.
Yeah, or even if you need to purchase any kind of good or service, if the option of kind of like, well, I mean, you wouldn't voluntarily go into debt, but if the option of going into debt and knowing you might be able to become a gladiator to pay it off is an option in the campaign world, I think that would be pretty cool.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm envisioning a campaign where you guys get like hurt during a battle scene, so you have to go into the city and get healed by the cleric, and his cost is, all right, well, I run this little arena out back. You got to come and do a bout for it. I keep the ticket prices.
All right, well, I was thinking, why would you go to the cleric of gladiators to get healed then?
He's the only one in town.
All right, fair enough. Foiled again. Ah.
One thing, though, that we really should stress is that being a service, being a slave, should not be easy.
Yes.
And although your players are going to chafe a little bit, in order to really get the flavor, the full flavor, they got to feel those constraints a little bit. They need the whip. You know, the trainer, the doctore, you got to whip them occasionally or something like that. Or they have to see how having somebody like a Lanista having complete control over their life, they have to see what that really means. And again, watching something like Spartacus, or watching something just like slavery, like Roots or something like that, can give you a real idea of just how horrible it could be. I mean, we're not trying to sell the slave life, although it'll be fun to play.
For a few hours once a month, it'd be awesome, but otherwise.
Yeah, again, just watching Spartacus and some of the things that they have to do just because it's entertaining, or just because one of the politicians wants to see something different or interesting, and you're like, wow, you really do not see these people as human beings, because if you did, there's no way you would have them do what you just asked them to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, totally agree with you, Lyle. If you do the slave thing, make them feel like slaves.
Yeah, and it has to be difficult if they want to escape. I mean, this is like a prison. I mean, but I guess even more so than a prison is these luduses are used to dealing with armed slaves. And not only armed slaves, but slaves that they're actually training to be even better at fighting.
Right.
So they have the safeguards in place, both physically and psychologically. And we'll touch on one of the psychological ones in a moment. But they have that in place in order to control and that situation and the control their service, their gladiators. So it shouldn't be a case of the player just going, well, I really don't want to do that, so I'm just going to break out. And like, oh, wow, why didn't anybody else think of that? All right, so let's talk about one of those psychological controls, if you will, and that would be fraternitas, brotherhood, or familia gladiatoria. Kind of sounds like it is. Like family of gladiators.
Familiar gladiator.
The other gladiators are your brothers. And one thing that is really interesting about these brothers, or maybe, I mean, if you fought with your brother a lot, not so surprising, is that you could be...
Lyle, are you reliving something here?
No, but these are your brothers. Like a military campaign, your comrade in arms, and that you could also be called upon to fight them.
Mm-hmm.
And you have no say in that. And so there's that, which is a really interesting aspect. But also, that is a control. And there's certain nobility in being a gladiator, and a certain comradeship that you don't see very much outside of a military lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
No, I do think that's an interesting point, how, yeah, you're training with these people, sometimes you're expected to fight as a unit, but as you said, at the same time, you might also be expected to fight and kill each other. So what kind of relationship can you really have with the other people or the other gladiators in the same ludus as you? And I think that would be really interesting and fun to explore, that kind of relationship.
Yeah, and I mean, sometimes it's a nice way of getting people together who, let's say, don't have... They create very different characters, and you're always like struggling, well, how do I get these people together and say that they're all together?
Right.
And one way is, yeah, you know, the gladiators, you don't really have to think of any kind of cohesion other than the fact that, hey, you're all gladiators, and you might not get along, but too bad.
Yeah, you're stuck here.
Yeah.
And you might, you know, you might get to fight each other, which can be interesting and be quite a way to police your players in a sense.
Mm.
That if they're always bickering, then the guy's like, all right, you guys are going to fight in the next games against each other. Now, oftentimes these fights weren't to the death. I mean, you could have several draws in that, and I mean, there's the, what do they call it? The missio, where you stick your two fingers up and indicating that you're ready to surrender.
Right.
And
you're
pardoned.
Or if you put on a bad show and you get killed. I think that'd be, yeah, as you said, an interesting way to start a campaign, because the GM wouldn't have to worry about player cohesion. He'd just say, yeah, make whatever character you want. Here are the parameters with which you can make your character inside these constraints. And then at the end saying, one requirement is at the end of your backstory, right, where the game would pick up, you have to be a slave. Don't really care how you got there, what you were before, you're now a slave. And the game starts off with all the characters belonging to the same domina,
mm-hmm.
or dominus. And that's the party. You don't have to like each other, you don't even really have to get along, but you know what, you're expected to get along somewhat and act as a team. And as you said, Lyle, like, bickering, hey, how many times have we seen on the TV show Spartacus, you know, people training, and things get a little out of hand because the two people don't like each other? So even with, like, blunted weapons or out in the practice yard, I think that would be an interesting and, I think, fun way to get out, not player aggression, but character aggression. Yeah, like, one character say, I really don't like that guy, so I know we're training, but I'm actually going to hit him a little harder than I should,
mm-hmm.
you know. It's almost like an allowable player-on-player combat, except no one's going to die.
Yeah, and also, I mean, that's kind of negative, but another positive is, like, yeah, they can bicker and quarrel, but at the end of the day, it comes down to this fraternitas, this brotherhood,
mm-hmm.
and then they'll kind of do what needs to be done, or protect each other. Whereas a lot of times in a game, and again, this also helps that they're all service, they're all slaves, where the players are at odds,
right.
to the point where, why are we even doing this, you know? Why are we together?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At this point in the story, we would just go our separate ways, and the GM says, okay, and like tears up the campaign notebook and says, oh, thanks for playing. How about someone else GM? Yeah, but here, and I didn't think about it until you brought it up, Lau. Yeah, as you said, the gladiators all get marked when they sort of pass that test. And yeah, even though you don't like each other, if you all have the mark, it means you were good enough to earn this mark, and you went through the same thing as everyone else with that mark. So yeah, you're our brother, and even though we don't like you, you're kind of family.
No, that's a good point. I mean, there's the two marks that you could work with. One is the mark of the service, and that's what the outside world sees, is
right.
that you're the slave. But yeah, there's that internal mark. I think in Spartacus, it's just because of the name of the Lanista, it begins with a B, so it even looks like brother.
Right.
So they're marked with a B. So that's the mark that they look at.
Hmm.
And yeah, there is that status is who has the mark is one. And of course, if who earned the mark, because there's
right.
ways that, at least in Spartacus, that you can get it without actually having to really earn it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking of that too, and I like the relationship that creates. It's like, okay, well, we all have the mark, and yeah, you have the mark too, but you know what? You didn't really earn it.
Yeah, you're falsy.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, even like the physical mark, like in Spartacus, it's the brand, and I think it's always in the same place. And that reminded me of kind of the, you know, the ritual we've brought up in previous episodes, where it's like, even, even the look of this thing and even the spot that it's in is identical on all of us. And what does that mean? And how does that connect us, even if we don't like each other?
So you guys were referring to them working together and protecting each other. But since they're all kind of in the same group, they're obviously not allowed to. There's nobody fighting against them or invading the Ludus. What do they protect each other against?
Once you get out into the games, sometimes they have pairs of gladiators from the same Ludus fighting pairs of gladiators from a different Ludus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also, though, I mean, again, you get into, like, certain intrigue.
Mm-hmm.
And, if, like, let's say one guy came after another guy, the other, even though they hate the one that's being targeted, mm-hmm. they might step up and defend him because you don't actually kill another gladiator or something like that just because he is a brother.
Hmm. Okay, yeah. That makes sense. And I can see it in the political sense as well. You know, the if two people inside the same Ludus, if they hate each other, and, for example, if he was actually trading real blows during practice, I could see how the two guys who are friends might look out for one another against him. But, you know, that I think that's, I said it before, but I think the political side of it is just so interesting what you can do with it. Like, you brought up before, Wayne, about how one guy might be hitting another especially hard during the training. But, you know, if the Doctores sees that, he might see, like, these guys would be good. They might prove an entertaining match to go up in the crowd. So if you're doing that to another NPC or PC, like, that might signal for you to fight each other in the next match. You know, have it carry on into the game further. Or vice versa. Maybe they see that you guys aren't getting along, so they try and separate you and keep you apart so that you can't fight.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's also the honor thing, because you are representing yourself. You know, the gladiators do represent themselves when they go out and fight in the mm-hmm. arena, but they're also representing the person who owns them, the yeah. Lanista, or whoever the Lanista has rented them to.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, fighting in, like, pairs or multiples, if someone watches you obviously not go help someone, then how does that look?
Yeah.
You know, yeah, so you survive, you know, the game, but if you don't protect your companion in a way that's blatantly obvious to everyone else, well, you look ill-trained,
mm-hmm.
you reflect badly on the person who owns you and rented you, and you're probably not going to be treated very well once you get back to the Ludus. So
yeah, very true.
It I think it behooves you to, you know, act in concert and kind of put that stuff behind you.
Well, maybe at least consider that. I think it's important if you're making a gladiator character to consider what his motivation is. Is he going to be, you know, for his brothers? Or is he trying to look good for his master so that he gets preferential treatment as a slave? Or is it just for himself? Is he out for the glory? You know, I think it would be really important and helpful for your character to choose what you really want to do. What's your motivation? But that's something that I want to come back to later on.
I was going to say, let's not be sexist. Gladiators could have been women too.
This is true. This is true. And apparently they often fought dwarves, according to one article I read.
Really?
They said the novelty of specialty acts.
Yeah, I read that too, and it was kind of like, apparently female gladiators were kind of, not weird, but I didn't get a clear sense of how people reacted to them. On the one hand, they kind of seemed like really poorly received,
mm-hmm.
but on the other hand, it was kind of like, nope, they're held to the same standard and trained with the same, you know, rigorous training regimen as men were. So
yeah, well, there are a couple who seemed like they were serious gladiators. I think one of them, her name was Amazona or something similar to Amazon, which just kind of spells it out there. But there was another one, I think I just read this one off of Wikipedia, that one woman, she chased around animals with a spear topless, and it was just a novelty act for it. So I think maybe it just depends on the place and probably the Ludus.
Hmm.
Yeah, no, it was a novelty act, but of course it depends on what you want to play. I mean, of course, if you have players who want to play female characters or other types of characters, then that should be okay, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you wanted to play a really Roman-style
right.
game. One good thing about the Roman-style game is that you could play pretty much any ethnic. Now, I suppose you couldn't really play Far Eastern characters.
Right.
They'd have to explain how they made its way there. Or you couldn't play Native American characters. Alright, well, that's inside the Ludus, so now let's move outside the Ludus. So we did mention the three meals a day and the healthcare, but of course the main draw might have been the celebrities. So they were the celebrities of their day.
To the point where some gladiators even did product promotion before the fights.
Try Gladiator-O's.
Gladiator-O's.
But I'd heard before that they used to bottle gladiator sweat and sell it as perfume among Roman women.
I heard that too.
Yeah, I had no verification, but yeah. Whew, ooh, the gladiator.
I wonder if that would smell really that different.
Probably not.
When you want your wife to smell like a sweaty Colosseum combatant.
Hey, maybe you like that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, maybe yeah. The guy's like, yeah.
Yeah, true, no judgments.
Yeah. Put it on.
Douse yourself, baby. Let's go.
Now the sword belt. Yeah. Swing that gladius.
Turn over.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, come on. Like, you didn't go there, too.
Oh, I did, but we're supposed to keep this on the non-explicit end.
Hey, we didn't say anything.
Hey, well, why don't you keep talking and make it explicit?
There we go.
No, and I think, you know, that's something that can be a lot of fun to play with, that the players do have a certain fame that can fluctuate,
mm-hmm.
depending on their performance and not necessarily tied to their level.
Right.
Their particular ability level.
One of the other things that I think would be really cool about a gladiator game is the opportunity to use skills and abilities in a combat situation that you kind of normally wouldn't in a standard game, because it's not about killing your opponent. It's about killing your opponent in an entertaining way and working the crowd. And in other games, you know, typical fantasy games, how often does charisma get used by the fighter? Almost never, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe if it's tied to intimidation. But in like a gladiator game, no, charisma is important. You have to be able to kill your opponent and work the crowd and get them excited. And mm-hmm. I really like that about a gladiator style game. Using skills and abilities that would normally be considered social combat or, you know, sort of non-combat related skills in a combat situation, because you are also an entertainer in addition to a lethal killing machine.
Yeah, I agree completely. Like, I think it's worth keeping track of as a GM what their level of celebrity is. I mean, I'd even keep it as a numerical value to see kind of their rank. That way you can compare it to the other fighters in the Ludos and just see how important they are, how famous they are, and all the benefits and problems that come with it.
I think this is a good thing that it's external, and it doesn't have to be on the character sheet, or it doesn't have to be internal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a player, as they progress in experience points or levels, they might feel a certain sense of entitlement,
mm-hmm.
and you can't necessarily say, well, you drop two levels, because it's not like the loser,
right.
All that's attached to that, like their abilities and that.
Mm-hmm.
But they can see something that can really fluctuate depending on how they perform immediately.
Yeah.
And the crowds were like, or could, can be very fickle.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you can see good examples of this in Spartacus, but the Wayne's style point, I mean, anybody who's seen Gladiator, when he comes out and just, he's a, you know, ruthless killing machine, but it's over so quickly, and he's like, is this what you want? Is this what you want? And, no, that's not what we want.
Right.
We want to be entertained.
Are you not entertained? And like, no, we're not. Do it again. But no, I like that because, yeah, as you said, Lyle, you can't just sort of take away levels from characters if you're doing like a class and level system. But it is like, okay, well, why does character A over there, why is he getting all the attention and all stuff? It's like, well, he performed better than you.
Mm-hmm.
And the player would, I mean, not that the player would argue, you know, but the player would see it. It's like, oh, yeah, that's right. I had to do the missio last arena. You're like, yeah, that's right. And now nobody really likes you, so you better do something spectacular the next time you get to go out in the arena, if you do.
Yeah. You know? And there's also the, you know, there's a lot of times we talk about with, in combat, where you're trying to encourage the players to be more interesting in combat to the point where, like, you know, some systems try to work it in where you do all these stunts.
Right.
But if you just have something like a fame system or a celebrity system where it kind of forces the players to say, if you're going to tell me you swing your sword and roll the dice, then doesn't really matter if you kill the guy or not. You're not really going to get much out of that combat.
Mm-hmm.
But if you tell me you do some pretty spectacular things, or try and attempt to do some pretty spectacular things. I mean, it might prolong the combat, hopefully in a fun way.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But it adds entertainment for the crowd, and that's what it's really all about.
Yeah. And if you want to be really hard with it too, you can have the character's life depend on that. If he's an entertaining player, maybe the crowd will spare him. And if not, well, what do you know?
Well, yeah, I was thinking that too. It pretty much does depend. Like, yeah, you perform, you know, you lose enough or you don't put on a good enough show or you give the submission sign too many times, eventually the crowd is going to give you a thumbs down and you're going to die.
No, yeah. Can I? Well, I was thinking about something slightly different in that. Not that they were doing the missio too often, but just that if they were really boring,
right,
when it comes time for the missio, they are going to get the thumbs down. Not like they do it a lot, but even that one time. So it's a way of combining, like, this is going to be a really dangerous setting.
Mm.
Like, you can die. You can get beaten in this setting.
Mm-hmm.
With how you can increase your odds by making everything entertaining. So the player, the crowd is going to want to have you back.
Yeah.
Right.
So it kind of gets it, you're trying to bridging, you know, well, the players kind of don't want to die every session. With
yeah.
the, they feel like they could die every session.
Mm.
And it's that incentive. It's like, all right, I've got to entertain. Not only do I have to entertain myself, I have to entertain the players around me. But I got to entertain the game master who is acting as a surrogate for this crowd.
How interesting would it be to develop like a mechanic where it's not, yeah, as you said, Lyle, it's not the game master or the person running the game who kind of decides the mood of the crowd. It's everybody at the table then votes.
That's good. Yeah.
You know, it's just like, yeah, okay. How did I do? Was I entertaining during that fight? Did I do something that made you say, "Oh, that's cool"? And, you know, enough people raise their hand. Well, okay, then the crowd gives you the thumbs up. If enough people say no, but of course you would have to go into the game with everybody knowing that, you know, you don't just spring it on the players. Yeah. Then, as you said, if they know that's going on and if they know that, okay, everyone around me is going to vote, I better do something great if I don't want my character to die.
It also then, it's also an incentive for the player to make their alone time, their solo time, interesting for everybody.
Right.
A lot of times, you know, we always talk about the problem when the party gets separated. And sure, you can do a lot of pairing battles or foursomes, four on four. But we all know that while that was a possibility, a lot of times there was a lot of one-on-one stuff.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And of course, you can have them fight another player, but you might not always want to tell, you know, you want the full spectrum. So when the guy's on his own, or the woman's on her own, and she's doing her battle,
mm-hmm.
and so the other players aren't, you know, looking on their smartphones or whatever, that's like, yeah, entertain. You're involved too, because you're the crowd.
Yeah.
And do you like what you hear?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, even make them more involved in that. Have them actually play the crowd, not as in like a member of the crowd, but react to the battle. You know, if it's going well, if the player is being entertaining, you can, I don't know, maybe dish out some kind of fame points or something to either in front of everybody or to the DM. You can kind of play it up that you're excited or less so, start booing like that, and then have the GM take that into account.
Oh, I was thinking, if you want to get real, not brutal, but even though we don't like bennies, I would say, okay, when you are doing the one-on-one fight, everybody else gets like a fame token or something. And you like what the player did, hand them the fame token.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then you would have like one to give out during the battle. And it's like, oh, well, no, you didn't wow me, so you don't get it. Sorry.
You know? The only caveat I would say to that is I think it's a good idea, but I want to make clear to the players that they're not kind of just voting on the player. They actually are role-playing. It's just they're role-playing a large group of people in their reaction.
But, okay, I'm not sure I see that distinction, but yeah. I think a danger would be that they just start throwing the points, mm-hmm. just so the guy doesn't die.
That right. That's what I meant. Yes.
Yeah, but no, absolutely. Yeah, they should play it. And I think we've touched on this in the other elements, is that when you're playing this, is you don't necessarily like the other people,
mm-hmm.
and being a gladiator is more important than necessarily these individuals. So it's kind of like the players are there. It's more important for us to like kind of embrace this whole setting than to be buddies with the people at the table.
Right.
And that means now I'm going to be the crowd. And because, you know, in the next games, I might be fighting this guy one-on-one. And I want to win, not him.
So. Right. Even in addition to like winning, like if you do something to track individual gladiator fame, well, then it's like you kind of already have that competition in there. You're like, no, I want to be the champion of the Ludus. I want to have the most favor points or the most, you know, celebrity points out of anyone else at the table.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of already get into that competitive mood, I think. I think that would be pretty cool.
Another thing that I think you could play around with and have a lot of fun is the fights themselves. And I don't mean the actual combat, but as opposed to a regular game where combat comes probably as something of a surprise or a random encounter. You don't have that much pre-planning to it. But in this thing, you have a lot of pre-planning. You know days, weeks before a tournament is coming up. And it gives you a lot of chances, the GM, to hype up this battle so that you know what the other ludists, what kind of gladiators they have. You might even know who you're going to be facing long time beforehand. So you can really foreshadow and build up tension with the players to make it as exciting as possible.
No, I think that would be cool. So, like, as we were talking in, like, the swords episode, you know, sometimes it is a shame that people just go for, like, the highest damage dice, and that's kind of all they really care about. But, again, with, like, a gladiator system or a gladiator setting, I actually see that as contributing to the celebrity. A player or a character would choose to use a weaker weapon because using it against a more heavily armed or a more dangerous opponent would bring them more fame and notoriety. So even on kind of like a mechanical level, it's, well, I have this weapon that does like a D6 versus my opponent who has like a weapon that's like a D10. They have the same amount of hit points. If I beat him, that's going to be a pretty big achievement, and I should get a commensurate reward in whatever resource you're using to track celebrity or fame. So I think that's, or this is a setting where it would actually work in, I guess, the game's benefit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of the different kinds of gladiators that were out there, they had very different kind of weapons. And that was the main distinction between them, how they were armed and armored. So I think it's definitely a good time to bring up something different about the weapons rather than just a damage die for it. And it'd add, again, more excitement and realism to it. I think, though, that they... you probably wouldn't have much of a chance to go up against a big armor guy with a smaller weapon. I think they kind of paired like and like, or they had specific matches that they had, so I don't think you're able to choose. But, you know, in a game you can do whatever you want.
No, I think sometimes they would say, yeah, generally the certain types of gladiator, they felt, I think, complemented each other well or had, you know, similar fighting styles and so were equally balanced. But then sometimes you think, yeah, you know, people... Or the people who owned the gladiators, as we said, kind of didn't really think of them as people. And it's like, no, you know what? I wonder what would happen if we paired up weapon, you know, A and B. And yeah, well, who do you think would win? It's almost, I see it as kind of the old, super old school way to solve one of those, you know, bar disputes. Gee, mm-hmm. Which weapon do you think is better? Hey, let's have our gladiators fight and find out. And you're like, oh, yeah, you were right. All right.
And hey, a real part of history was, you know, if they had crazy senators out there, they said, I want to see this battle, then that's what they did.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they want to see this animal against this animal. Yeah, mm-hmm. They would do that.
Hey, what do you think would win? Unarmed slave or tiger? Gee, I don't know. Let's find out.
I would like to see a woman against a dwarf.
Yeah, I hope dwarf's the word we can use.
Well, that's what was on Wikipedia, so I assume it's the correct one.
All right.
Rather than little person, I don't know.
You certainly doubled down on that word.
I'll say it slowly. Dwarf.
Yeah, so interesting with the styles is, yeah, they represented different regions. Like, you had the Samnite, the Gaul. Samnite would be the Samnus, the Gaulus, to represent the Gaul. And the Thraix, to represent the Thracian. Mm-hmm. So that's something...
The Hoplomachus.
To represent the Hoplo...
That one actually was pretty interesting. It was, I guess the Romans made an alliance with the Samnites, so they stopped calling them Samnites and changed the name to Hoplomachus. Trivia. Rar.
I think I read that too. Just from, like, the expansion of the Roman Empire, eventually, like, well, these people are kind of citizens now, so maybe we shouldn't have people fight to the death dressed as them. Okay.
I mean, what you can do with that is, like, if you don't want to play in the Roman world and you do have an established setting, is that's one way you can kind of easily set the styles in your game.
Oh, that would be cool.
Is the different regions. And of course, we talked about the science fiction worlds, or you talk about the fantasy. You can have the different races, and you play that up as well.
Oh, man. I just have this image now of, like, a classic D&D style where, okay, we're going to dress you guys as elves. And you guys are going to fight, you know, a group of, air quote, orcs. There you go.
You know what's great about that is they don't actually have to be elves or orcs.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, they're using those weapons, or they specialize mm-hmm. in, like, traditional, like, the dwarven war axe. And dwarf, I don't mean in the offensive way that Chris has been using it all episode. I mean as in the fantasy race.
You got me all worried. For what it's worth, if I am misusing the term, my apologies to anyone.
To the dwarves.
We'll make sure to put Chris's personal email address at the end
well,
of this episode.
I don't think I'd like to use that word very much, but you can call him whatever you want.
I think that would be pretty cool. You just kind of take like, yeah, a fantasy race or an alien race or, yeah, a region from this setting that you have. And no, it's just your basic kind of people are dressed as that and use the same kind of weapons. Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, totally.
I'm thinking Mind Flayer, Gladiator.
Oh, jeez. This guy goes out with, like, tentacles on his hair.
Yeah.
They don't really work. They don't really work. Please, give me a sword.
Hey, how about the psionics, too? Come on.
I don't actually have psionics.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and of course, if you have magic or other things like that, I mean, it doesn't take much of a stretch to then incorporate that. And that would raise quite a challenge if you had magic-using gladiators, like how to confine them, how to make them service.
Mm.
Because again, yeah. I mean, I know a lot of times we say in Warriors is like, pull some of these elements and incorporate them into your game, but I mean, I think in this case, you know, they come as a package. If you really want to get the gladiator feel, I think, having somebody show enough at 9 o'clock to do the 9 to 5 shift and then go home and live a normal life, then...
Oh, you mean like a slave, a.k.a. Star Wars style. All right.
Yes. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I forgot.
No,
that's a good reinterpretation of the slave.
No, but I guess you kind of brought it up before, but it stands to reason, like, as you said, you are, the Lannister is training these slaves to be proficient with weapons. And what kind of precautions do the owners and do the trainers have to take to prevent violence against themselves? And if you transport that to a fantasy or a science fiction setting, I think it stands to reason, whether you introduce like psionics or magic or cyberware or any kind of special tech, whoever owns these slaves, and as you said, well, they will be slaves, whoever owns these slaves will have taken magical, psionic, or whatever precautions to make sure the equipment the gladiators have does not prevent them or does not allow them to, you know, break their shackles and just run around slaughtering people.
Right.
Fantasy gladiator setting. Well, you probably have some kind of wards around the training area.
Yeah, I was thinking in the same way as in the sci-fi setting where you have an explosive collar around their neck, you can probably have some kind of magical geyser ward spell on the person themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then have little barriers where, like, they throw stuff against it, and that can be fun because... I mean, we saw a battle in Spartacus where there's just, like, fire around them.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, a magical barrier, yeah. How cool would it be, like, you have that kind of scene where, you know, the Dominus is, you know, up on the balcony with all his government friends looking down at the guy's training, and, like, a fireball just comes up. But, of course, there'd be all kinds of, like, magical barriers and stuff and just, like, explodes in front of him. I think that'd be a pretty cool display.
Yeah, in D&D, though, it would be like Fire and Forget, and then they'd be like, oh, I'm out of spell.
Like,
oh, there goes my fireball.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, just wait him out. He's only got a couple more of those high-level spells, and he's all yours.
But 8 hours from now, I'm going to still get you.
Yeah.
You know what would be like, really cool in the style? Like, we're talking about D&D, and you like have a fireball, right? But we're talking about the celebritus saying that would be pretty boring if you just walked in and say, okay, cast fireball. Okay, he's a corpse. All right. Boo, down fame.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I was thinking about the rules for mage.
Right.
And I'd like to, we plan to do this, so I'm kind of like starting it now, I suppose. But we wanted to incorporate non-gladiatorial games and the elements that could be used to play that game in or to incorporate into a gladiatorial game. And one of them would be mage and the fact that, they don't really just cast spells so much as they combine dots in different spheres.
Right.
And create their own effects. And that's always been difficult to incorporate into a game, at least personally, because you kind of feel like you're on the spot.
Right.
And your creativity kind of runs dry. But I mean, in this case, and Chris touched on it, or mentioned it when he said, like, you know what's coming up.
Mm.
So you're playing a lot of the game, but then also think about that upcoming fight.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of cool effects do you want to use your spheres for? So I'm just throwing out there that Mage could actually be a nice system for a certain type of gladiatorial game.
Yeah.
I love the idea, Lyle. That is such a great idea because it gives you such a great way to kind of expand on and give that extra flair to your combat that really would drive a fame mechanic that we were talking about before. But I wonder if it would balance well with Mage because of the paradox. Kind of that's what keeps your power level down. But if everybody already knows that you're a mage and fighting here, then you can kind of go wild.
Yeah, but then I think you just have to balance it with, you know, maybe some kind of like insanity or something.
You know, no, no, like the Paradox, what are they, the Paradox Demons or whatever. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you like to watch a game where not only is there potential to watch two mages fight each other, but also paradox things to come out and devour the mages?
Point.
Now, of course, the people who are controlling this, they are able to insulate it. I mean,
you've sold me. That's awesome.
For example, but no, I think you raised a very good point about, you know, if you're taking a system like that and radically reworking it, you have to be careful that you're not cutting away certain safeguards or things like that. So rather than just getting rid of them, think about how you can incorporate them. But again, like Chris said, is like, if you know that fight's coming up, it does give you a lot of time to plan your creativity. And again, if you do styles, I mean, I thought the first mage game did a little bit better than the new mage game, but, you know, the different traditions. I know I'm fighting this tradition. Generally, they have these spears, those kind of things.
Yeah.
Then you enter the whole metagame of, well, they usually do this, which means I'm going to do that, but maybe they know that they usually do that and all that stuff. But I was going to say, it also kind of gets into the honor thing and the fact that the slaves know that they are an investment. Like using mage specifically, okay, so if you use your powers too much and cause paradox, well, I guess you won't care a huge amount because you'll be dead. But not only will you be dead, but you'll also have like...
You'll be like really dead.
Yeah, no, you'll be really dead, but you'll also, like, your name will be completely forgotten. You'll have set the notoriety of your dominus, whoever owns you, back more. And, okay, maybe you wouldn't care if you're a convicted criminal or, like,
or dead.
A prisoner of war or dead. But hear me out. If you're one of those people who, you know, were working off a debt, well, you still had family somewhere, and now everybody kind of hated you. So... Mm-hmm. What kind of life would that lead for your family?
No, no, sure, but I think you could even just use celebritas to do that.
Oh, yeah.
In that, if you're going to do it in a boring way or just always invoke paradox, which, I mean, depending on how the crowd reacts, but if you...
Well,
the
first time it was awesome!
Yeah, the first time it was cool, but then the second time it's like, oh, he's doing it. We see these paradox things, but we see it because he just ends the battle in, like, 2 seconds.
Yeah. Oh man, the 10th time those paradox demons came out, lame.
Oh, demons, whatever.
Yeah. Oh, you've got two mages fighting in a gladiatorial battle. Yeah, maybe you might be a little blasé over demons. Demons, whatever.
No, I was actually thinking ubiquity a little bit, because it's kind of similar to World of Darkness, but it's a little bit more heroic and over the top, and I think that would lend itself well to doing a bit more flair in combat. But then you mentioning mage, Lyle, the all-for-one setting has an on-the-fly magic system where you just create effects and things you want to. And yeah, if you did put magic or mix magic into your gladiator game, again, I think that would also be a decent system to use, because it's like, okay, what am I going to do right now? And you just kind of come up with something on the fly and the system handles it pretty well.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I mean, I think World of Darkness, of course, always is a good system for just about anything. But yeah, you've brought up some good points about ubiquity, which is, I think, the sister game of World of Darkness.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think either one of them can work for those reasons.
I think you could pull in the stunting mechanic from Exalted for adding that extra flair to it, because that's exactly what it is.
Are you still talking
flair.
About dwarves?
What?
Stunting.
Oh,
ba-dum-bum.
Okay. Anyway, you can bring in the stunting mechanic to add that extra flair to it, because it's already built in, and it is a White Wolf a White Wolf system,
yeah.
So it could pair with.
And you know why that's a good idea? Because one thing that people say about Exalted is that it's broken, or sorry, it breaks as you get into the higher levels,
mm-hmm.
or higher powers. But I mean, if you set your game where a lot of the rewards are very external, not internal.
Mm-hmm.
Then you kind of just fix your players at a certain level.
Right.
And it's all about getting the rewards externally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's a very good point. When we mentioned before about what kind of game to use with this, my actual first thought was, even though I'm not a very big fan of it, D&D 4E. And the reason I was thinking that is because it has the your moves, your powers, which are kind of built-in stunts, but also because it works on a hit point mechanic, so it has attrition, so I think the battle would last a little bit longer, maybe
Too long?
In the case of 4E, too long. But I also thought that the downside of it is that you have the whole leveling mechanic, and I don't think it would, A, work very well in the kind of brotherhood fraternus idea that we were talking about before. It's a bit too individual. And also, you know, it's just D&D power creep. Eventually you're going to outpower everybody in the city, so why would you remain a slave?
Like, yeah, you could certainly do it in D&D 4E, and D&D 4E is heroic and kind of over the top, and yeah, that's what it did. But, yeah, you certainly could do it. But with the powers, I kind of get the feeling that, again, thinking of Celebritus and the crowd, I think they get pretty boring. Oh, he's using Iron Strike again. Boo, boo.
Well,
oh,
allow
Lieutenant Will, give him a break.
But that could be part of it, you know. If you read the flavor text off the card, what's that going to be worth for fame?
Yeah.
But, yeah. But anyway, that was my first thought, and I think that there might be something there with the dragging out the combat with the attrition hit point kind of thing, but I don't think I would actually recommend 4E for it.
Yeah. Well, one thing, and we did talk about this before the episode started, but Marvel Heroic Roleplaying.
Mm.
And that there are like so many nice elements. I think the main hurdle is figuring out how to build your character.
Right.
I mean, you could just do straight up and it's like, well, okay, I'm Spider-Man in a gladiatorial arena. Great. Well, problem solved. But if you're not
hard to find things to swing from, but still.
No, I know. I'm sure there could be. But if you're not going to do straight up superhero gladiators, then yeah, you just got to figure out how to make your characters. Perhaps as you recommended before the episode started, Chris, is just going with the kind of the core Margaret Weiss system, Cortex.
Right.
But we're more familiar with Marvel Heroic Roleplaying, and just the, you know, there's so many different things you can do. Of course, the plot points.
Yeah.
That can be used for different effects. One thing that I think is very exciting is the Doom Pool, which, you know, different things that you do can contribute to that positively, negatively. And
oh,
the Game Master. Yeah?
Sorry to interrupt. You saying that the Doom Pool could be, yeah, somehow link it to crowd favor.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah.
That's exactly what I was thinking too, yeah.
Yeah, and I could see that being, yeah. Actually, in that case, adding dice to the Doom Pool would be almost like a positive thing, because you could say, okay, this is the crowd's favor, and yeah, you're adding to it, you're ramping up the crowd. But then, yeah, you have the effects where you can then take a die from the Doom Pool and, you know, add it to whatever dice pool you're forming. It's like, well, okay, yeah, you do that, but you know what? The crowd doesn't like you as much now. By doing that, you've kind of reduced their enthusiasm a little bit. So if you could work that out somehow, I think that would be really awesome.
Yeah, I think when you build your dice pool in the Marvel RPG, you can, all of the different kinds of flair and special effects that you're adding to your moves, those would of course increase your fame. But if the NPC you're fighting against, if they have a Doom Pool, then they can use that for their own flair and excitement, build their own fame.
Yeah.
But also, as I was mentioning earlier in the episode, I said it with this in mind, that I think it's good to have a motivation for your character, whether it be for his own personal glory, for his Ludos, or perhaps for his other brethren. That's one of the first steps in building the Marvel Heroic Doom Pool, is whether you work well as solo, pair, or as a group.
Oh,
I think that
yeah.
can be built right into the character there.
Absolutely. And then there's the different types of stress.
Yes.
Oh, that'd be great, especially because, like, if you have the different kind of non-lethal weapons or being caught in a net or something, oh, that'd be great.
I was thinking more just like you insult the guy so bad that, yeah, you know what, he's got all that emotional stress because he looks like a complete chump in front of everybody.
Right, so. Build it up before the battle. Oh, that's great.
Or yeah, even, but oh, that would be nasty. I wasn't thinking like, you know, brother PCs doing that, but yeah, that would be pretty nasty. You know, hey, you actually start the pair battle and one of the guys emotionally messed up. I just thought of more of like insulting your opponent from the other Ludus, but yeah, ouch.
Maybe it's all built up. You walk into the arena, the other guy says one thing, and you break down crying.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be pretty rough.
Yeah, I mean, so we're very excited about that idea. I mean, that's something that we talked about before. And then I would guess a more obvious suggestion would be a Song of Ice and Fire role-playing, but just because it's obvious doesn't mean it's not a good idea, and I think it'd be very easy to make your character, which is great. And what they do with the weapons will be is excellent. The different effects that the weapons have, which, unlike a 4E, I find it adds ideas, but doesn't restrict ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think in the Song of Ice and Fire, you'd really be able to see the different matchups between the different weapons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the that the aspect mechanic where you're allowed to give some just narration, storytelling, and it has a mechanical effect on the scene, that really could play into the flair that you want to add to your gladiatorial combat to try and rev up the audience.
Yeah.
There was a game we brought up, I think it was in the Greek Pantheon Pandemonium episode.
Was it that one or Hoplites?
It was one of those two. I forget exactly which. Sorry, it was the game's called Agon by John Harper. And
that was in Hoplites.
I knew it was one of those two. But the game is set for like a Greek heroes. But because of the idea of arate and all constantly being in competition, it's a game where the players compete amongst themselves. Like you get glory points for beating contests, you know, kind of like yeah. tasks. You get points for rolling or having the highest die result if multiple people are in the combat. You get glory points for all this other stuff. And even though the characters are technically working together, the GM is encouraged to actually have a big visible score track that says this is how many glory points each of the characters have, and the award for most damage in the single turn goes to this player, and the award for, like, you know, highest die roll goes to that, most kills goes to this player, and you're encouraged to put it up there almost like a big visible scoreboard that everybody can see. And I think that would be great for a gladiator game, because then it's like, oh yeah, such and such is above me in this category, and I really want to beat him, so I'm going to be super awesome the next fight we have.
And the level mechanic, I suppose, if you could call it that, is based off of that, of how famous you are, or how much glory you have, rather.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, just the name Agon, it means competition, so it's ideal for anything that has to do with competition.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And one last thing that I wanted to mention as well is, if you're thinking of running a campaign for this, it's not always going to be the same kind of combat. So it's not, if you're worried about it getting boring, just one guy versus one guy, or two versus two, or as Wayne mentioned, three versus three. But there's a whole array of different kinds of events that go on in the gladiatorial arena. They have blinded matches where they have helmets that cover their eyes. They have fighting animals, of course. They have reenacting hunts, reenacting mythologies and mythological battles. They even flooded the whole Colosseum and sailed out little boats to have simulated naval battles, races on chariots, duels on chariots, all kinds of different things. There's tons and tons of different kinds of combats that you can have, so there's lots of variety.
I mean, there's lots of variety in like a standard quasi-historical Roman setting, but then just imagine how much more creative stuff you can do if you take it to like a sci-fi or fantasy setting.
Absolutely. Zero gravity gladiatorial combat. Wow.
Yeah, there you go.
I really want to play that now.
I was thinking a bit more simply, I'm just combining the medieval tournaments, you know, the jousting, with the gladiatorial storyline. Yeah, you can do that if you want. Except maybe the archery competition would be kind of boring.
I think it'd be pretty exciting. Hey, you're both trying to shoot at each other.
Oh, is that what you meant? I meant at the targets.
Yeah, that's
I meant at
how the archery competition.
Yeah, I meant at the targets too. And in the gladiator arena, you would be the target.
Not the same thing. It's hard to do the finesse. Yeah, but yeah, if you do it in the different different worlds, then yeah, there's so much more you can do with that. But like Chris said, it's not like the Romans were hurting for imagination.
Lacking for ideas, yeah.
No.
Yeah, how many of those things did you look at and you say, wow, who even came up with that?
I don't know. I would be like, yeah, I want to see different animals fight. Wouldn't you want to see a bear? And I don't want to get like animal rights people on us, because I certainly wouldn't do this.
Another case, animal rights people, stop listening right now.
But wouldn't you want to see who would win, like a bear or a lion? Well, that ends episode 100, and I hope you enjoyed our episode on gladiators. And if you didn't, then watch Spartacus, and you might enjoy it more. And if you did enjoy it, still watch Spartacus, because it's a really good series.
Definitely worth watching.
Mm-hmm. Good episode. Were you not entertained? Yeah. All right, well, thank you for joining us on Idle Red Hands. Check us out online at www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. You can listen to the episodes right there on the website, or you can stream them through Stitcher or through iTunes. You can also download the episodes off of DriveThruRPG. You can post comments on the website or follow us on Facebook or Twitter, put comments up there, or join up in our forums, and talk to us, send us an email, because we always love hearing from you. Thanks, and see you next time.
I like how Chris could actually quote Spartacus. So talking about that, yeah, he's like, oh yeah, good episode. Hey, gladiator. All right, bye.
Bye.
Drive-through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-through RPG. The one true source for RPGs.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.